We have our very own brother Andy, who's going to give us those very necessary words of exhortation.
Thank you.
Right, afternoon everybody.
Afternoon.
Actually, I don't think I need to give any words of exhortation, I've just realised, because if you'd listen carefully to Alan's prayer there, his prayer pretty much was, and is, my exhortation. So I don't know whether to just sit down and call it a day at your, you know, with your prayer, and have 20 minutes off. But I might keep going. But really, Alan's prayer, as you'll see, was exactly the message, I think, from an exhortation point of view, that I put down. I decided to look up the word exhortation because we sort of come along every week and we have word of exhortation. And I thought I'd just double check what the word of exhortation means. What does the word exhortation mean? Because we don't really use it, do we, in everyday language? I can't remember ever at work saying to anybody the word exhortation. It's really only here that we use it. And because of that, sometimes we might lose track. What does it actually mean? Just the word, what does it mean? So I looked it up, and in Strong's Concordance it says, and I didn't know this, but it means to call to one side, in other words, calling somebody next to you, to summon them, to be with you, to encourage them, to admonish them, to entreat them. So that's what exhortation is. I'm not going to be admonishing and telling anybody off, don't worry about that. This is more about encouragement first on the list anyway, so let's stick with encouragement. But sometimes maybe exhortation does admonish us, doesn't it? Sometimes it does make us think, yeah, I really need to pull my socks up and I've gone off in the wrong direction. And of course, I think it's really good that we do have exhortation before we have bread and wine, because we just came here, sat down, took bread and wine after a prayer and went home, then really we haven't done enough to get our brains into gear. So I gave the word of exhortation a few weeks ago, I think it might have been 2 weeks ago, and we were looking at the 14 ingredients of love, if you remember some of that. And then we looked at the armour that you put on, if you remember, we looked at all the different armour parts that we put on. So I thought, well, what should we do today for exhortation? And I thought we'd try and keep it simple and keep it to what Jesus said. And Jesus gives us the exhortation today. Really straightforward, ever so simple one. Because have a look in Mark 13 if you're there. So in Mark 13 and verse 35, in the NIV version, it says it like this. And this is the exhortation, dead simple. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether it's in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. In fact, I've got that on the Weekly World Watch at the top of the website. What I say unto you, I say unto everyone, watch. So that's it. That's Jesus' final comment. At this point in Mark chapter 13, it's not complicated. He's telling us to watch. And of course, as Alan said in his prayer, in this chapter, we've got lots and lots of things that we should be watching, haven't we? So that really is what we want to have a little think about. Because it says there, we don't know when the owner of the house is going to come back. So we're in a house, and we're waiting for the owner to come back, aren't we? Which makes me think, if we're in the owner's house, that means we're probably not family because we're in the owner's house. It sounds more like we're in the house because we're the servants, do you know what I mean? And we're waiting for the owner to come back. And the problem is, because we don't know when he's going to come back, we don't know if it's in the evening, midnight, morning, dawn, what we don't want to be doing is sleeping. Because when he turns up, we want to be awake. So I was thinking, well, what does it mean if we were sleeping when the owner gets back? Or in other words, when Jesus gets back, what does it really mean to be asleep? Well, if we are servants in this house, servants should be busy doing things for the owner, shouldn't they? You don't want us just lying around doing nothing. So when the owner comes back, when Jesus comes back, surely it means if we're sleeping, we've stopped being busy for God. We've stopped being busy for Jesus. We've gone super lazy. If we're asleep, we're doing absolutely nothing. So it's something to do with, if we're asleep, it's probably something along the lines of we're losing our faith, we're putting God second, we're not working hard enough for him. We might just have given up. We've given up waiting for the owner to come back. We sort of think, yes, he might, but he probably won't. And I'm just going drowsy. I'm going to have a lie down and start sleeping. One thing is for certain. When Jesus gets back, we want to be busy. We don't want to be sleeping, do we? Because we show our faith by our works. It's all very well saying, yeah, I believe. But just saying I believe and doing nothing, God says, well, therefore you haven't got faith. Because faith without works is dead. It's not even alive. It's absolutely stone cold dead. So we have to be busy. That's what I think we're being told here. And the way somehow that we keep busy is by... one of the things is by watching, staying awake. So it isn't just being busy, but it's also looking to see when he is going to return. Because if we're looking out and we can see in the distance, you know, I was going to say, I don't know what transport he would be in this analogy, but, you know, there's some dust coming up on the ground and you think, yeah, I can see his car coming down the track here. I can see him coming in. Then you're going to think, right, I'm going to do this. I know when Ange gets back on Friday, she's been away. I know I'll be going round the house like a lunatic. Is she listening to this? You know, already it looks a mess. I've got to tell you, it looks a mess. Especially Mike downstairs isn't so bad because Matt and Sophie are around. So, but my bedroom, our bedroom, looks a complete mess. Like, you wouldn't believe it. So I know, before she gets back, I've got to tidy up. And do you know, if we knew Jesus was coming back tomorrow, what would we do in our lives? Would we go back and put the voice on and think, yeah, I'll watch that tonight? No, you wouldn't. You'd be thinking, I better get myself in some order. Would I be thinking, what holiday am I going to plan in 3 months? No, you wouldn't. You'd be thinking, Jesus is coming back. And the more we're watching and the more we can see and sense Jesus close to coming back, we probably get more motivated, would you think? Yeah. And I think that's what he's saying here. If you're watching, because you don't know the hour, if you're watching, you're probably going to stay awake, you're probably going to stay busy, you're probably going to stay active, you're probably going to stay on side and not give up. It's a great danger, isn't there, that we might, and we know Christadelphians, brothers and sisters in Christ that have literally given up, don't we? We all know people, they've just given up. And you think, what? Is this really the time to pack up? There's a finishing line about there, and you've run 30 years, and I'm just going to stop now. What? It's only a few more steps, and you're over the line, and now is not the time to give up. Come and have a look, because in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, Paul picks up this exact message from Jesus and changes it. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. I've never really thought about this before, but he's almost quoting directly from Jesus back in Mark 13. But he changes it. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 2, it says, For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness that that day should overtake you as a thief. You are the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night, nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. Now, do you see what Paul's done here? He's changed it. It's almost identical to what Jesus said, isn't it? In terms of stay, don't fall asleep, stay awake, somebody's coming back. But this time, it isn't the owner of a house that's coming back. It's a thief. Paul has changed Jesus from being the owner of the house to being a thief. Which is quite strange that he's done that, I think. But why has he changed it to being like a thief? If we were back in Mark 13, it says about the owner of the house coming suddenly. So stay awake because he might come back suddenly. And I think what Paul's done here to really emphasise the point, because we already know Jesus is like the owner of the house that comes back. He says it's also like Jesus coming back is like a thief. And some Christadelphians will tell you that this means the thief-like aspect of Jesus is because he comes back quietly. Like no, the world won't know he's come back because we'll be whisked away. Nobody knows. That is not what the case is. It isn't the quietness of Jesus coming back that we're being talked about here. The thief-like aspect of Christ coming back is exactly the same that Jesus said in the passage that we read. It's the suddenness, in other words, the unexpectedness of it, not the quietness of it. So when Jesus comes back, it's like, because does anybody have on their calendar the date that a thief is going to come and burgle them? Nobody. There's no date. You can't put on that yet. On the 28th of Feb, I'm going to be burgled. There's a note on there, so we'll be all awake and ready for that date. Nobody has a date on the calendar for a thief. It's totally and utterly unexpected, isn't it? And a lot of thieves, you know, when they burgle, make a great deal of noise. They'll smash windows, break doors down, they wake people up. The amount of people that are woken because a thief's come in, it isn't because they've been super quiet. Some just don't care. But the unexpectedness of it is the problem. So we need to be, permanently alert. Because Jesus, like a thief, will come back unexpectedly, just when we're probably not maybe fully aware. But we should be aware, because it says, doesn't it, Jesus won't come like to us as a thief. Look in verse 4. You, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. Now, why is that? Well, because he's told us when to expect. No, there isn't a date on the calendar with it circled, that's the day. But he says, check out all these things. So you've got every single solitary chance of knowing that this is when I'm about to come back. When you can get up and you can dust yourselves off, you can get yourself ready. In Mark chapter 13, it doesn't actually say the bit I'm about to quote, but in Mark chapter 13, it says about Jesus coming back, doesn't it? Says he's going to send the angels to the four winds and collect everybody together that's on side. But in Matthew 24, which is a parallel passage to Mark chapter 13, it says that when Jesus comes back, he's going to come back with a great sound of a trumpet. Now that doesn't sound like quietness to me. Does it to you? When Jesus comes back, he's coming back making a noise. This isn't Jesus coming back all quietly and nobody knows he's here. We passed the Jehovah's Witnesses earlier on. I nearly stopped to talk to them, but I thought I need to eat a sandwich. But, you know, their whole thing is Jesus has come back, but we just haven't seen him. He's ruling right now. He came back in 1914. They might have changed the message recently on that, maybe. But that's what they used to say when they knocked on the door. He came back, we just didn't see him. There's a danger. Some of us in our community say a similar thing. I've actually heard Christadelphians say, the dead might already have been raised. We just don't know. Rubbish. We will know if the dead are raised because the trumpet will have sounded. The dead will be raised when the trumpet sounded. The trumpet sounded when Jesus has appeared in the clouds of heaven and great glory. The unexpectedness of Jesus is the point, not him coming back and nobody knows. He's not creeping in this time. He's not like little Jesus, gentle, meek and mild this time round. He's coming back as a great and glorious king, not secretly. He's going to make a noise. But it means So we're about to get burgled, and we would stay awake, wouldn't we? If we thought, yeah, there's somebody coming to burgle, you would definitely stay awake, wouldn't you? Yeah. You would definitely stay awake. That's what we got to do. The other thing I thought was, I hadn't thought about this till I wrote this morning at about 7:30. But the other thing that I thought was, Jesus, you know, is coming like a thief. Because I thought to myself, it's strange that he's even talked about as being a thief, because thieves are not nice, are they? You wouldn't really associate Jesus with a thief. And then I thought to myself, do you know something? To the world, it will be as shocking as a thief when Jesus comes back. No, do you know what I mean? When somebody's burgled, are you seriously distressed and upset? Totally and seriously upset and distressed. You've been violated. You've had your things taken. And if you think about it, from the world's point of view, the second that Jesus comes back, their world is turned upside down. Don't you think? You see, the world has got all of its faith in its wealth, in its pensions, in its investments, in its riches, in its material things. I know I'm talking predominantly about the Western world, but the most of the world has become, you know, rich, hasn't it? And when Jesus comes back, isn't all that just going to collapse into nothingness? In other words, Jesus is very much like a thief when he comes back, because he's taking away all the things that they hold dear. That's how they will see it. They won't say, oh, wonderful, Jesus has come back to the earth. How wonderful this is. All they will do is look at what they've now lost because he's back. Don't you think? And therefore, he will feel like a thief. He'll feel like somebody that's robbed them. And do you know something? That is why it says in the Bible that when Jesus comes back, the world will weep and gnash their teeth. That's amazing. The return of Jesus back to the earth will cause a majority of this world to weep and to gnash their teeth. Why? Because the things that they want and the things that they put their hope and trust in have vanished in an instant. That's why I think they are so distressed when he comes back. But to us, he isn't a thief, is he? He's not going to cause us any distress because we've been watching, we've been waiting, we're expecting. And actually, as I'll say in a minute, he isn't a thief to us. He's going to actually give us something. And he's going to give us something more precious, you know, than anything that money can buy. In fact, it's the one thing that the world wants more than anything that money can buy. And that, unbelievably, is immortal, everlasting, eternal life. Isn't that really what the world's constantly striving to look for? Some way to get us to live a few more years? That's what it is, isn't it? That's what they're trying to do. How do we live a few more years? Jesus is coming back into a house like a thief, but he's coming back into a very, very unpleasant house. If we think of the world being the house, isn't the world in a mess? This house that we find ourselves living in, not this little Ecclesian, but the world as a house, is in a complete and utter mess. It's full of wickedness. It's full of iniquity. It's full of absolute abominations going on. It's full of abuse of children. It's full of the most depraved, terrible things. This house needs a thief to come in and to remove all the horrible, terrible things that are going on. So going back to it, we need to watch, don't we? And I don't know if you know, did you notice it in 1 Thessalonians 5? Are you still there? He could have said a whole lot of things that we should have watched, but Paul picks out one thing and tells us to watch this. Now, Jesus gives us loads of stuff, and the Bible gives us loads of stuff, but he has picked out one thing. Did you notice it in verse 3? It says, well, verse 2 says, you know perfectly well that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as travail upon a woman with child. You think, well, that's strange, isn't it? Peace and safety. Surely we're told that the world is going to be like it was in the days of Noah. Surely we were told that the world's going to be full of violence, not peace. How is it that there's this peace and safety and then sudden destruction? Well, clearly it can't be true peace, can it? Whatever it is, it cannot be the peace that we expect when Jesus comes back. In other words, at the very best, this is some sort of false peace, would you think? Can't be true peace, can it? But the other interesting thing, when you look at it carefully, it doesn't say when there is peace and safety. Did you notice that? It says when they shall say peace and safety. And the word say just means to speak about. It's when they're talking about peace and safety, not when there is peace and safety. I think if Paul said when there is peace and safety, that would be quite different to saying when they shall be talking about peace and safety. Now, I don't know if any of you have got a modern translation, but modern translations don't say peace and safety. It says something else. Anybody? Peace and security. Most modern versions will say peace and security. Now, if this is a big sign for the return of Jesus, when people are talking about peace and security, that means my and our antennae are out like radars, like this, into the world the whole time. Ding, bam, peace. And so anybody saying peace and security makes me sit up and think, because you think, well, there you are. Now have a look at this. Don't normally do visual aids at an exhortation. This was on Wednesday this week. See this? See that? See that? Interesting. Do you know what this is? That's Benjamin Netanyahu, but do you know where he is? No? 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 No?
America?
No?
Yeah.
He's in Europe? No. He's in Warsaw in Poland. And what he's doing there is, they're having a conference that President Trump has put together, which he entitled Peace and Security in the Middle East. You see why that might be an interesting headline in the light of 1 Thessalonians? It's quite interesting. And what Trump has done is got Israel into Poland. There's a reason, by the way, in Poland. I mean, why Poland? I'll tell you in a second why in Poland. But there they are in Poland. So there's America there. There's Israel there. And the other main nations there are the Gulf Arab states. So there is Saudi Arabia. There's Oman. There's Bahrain. There's the United Arab Emirates. And countries like that all around the Gulf. And this whole idea of this conference that they held over 2 days was to set the stall out to say we need to unite against Iran, because Iran is going to come in and cause all sorts of trouble, and we need to be a coalition to stand up against Iran. And the reason that Trump said let's go to Poland is because Poland is next on the list, they believe, for Russia to start. You know, Russia went in and attacked Ukraine a few years ago. There's a lot of evidence today that they're building stuff up to cause trouble for Poland next. And so Poland has said we need American troops permanently stationed in our country. So as a message to Russia, they held this conference in Poland to say this is our coalition against you and Iran, and what your plans are, this is our plans against you. All under the heading of peace and security in the Middle East, which is exactly the sort of thing. So have we got people talking about peace and security? Yes, we have. Now, the next headline that happened was this. This is the day after. So I don't know whether you can read that. This is in the Times, right? That says, Sunni Arabs and Israel unite against Iran. So this is like the summary of the conference. This, I promise you, is Ezekiel 38 on a headline. Because, I don't know if you're aware, but Sunni Arabs refers to specific Arab people. So there's two types of Muslims. The Shia Muslims and the Sunni Muslims. There are a couple of others, but 95% of all Muslims are Shia or Sunni. Now, Sunni Muslims are those who live in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates. In other words, all of those Arab nations that live on the Arabian Peninsula. They're Sunni Arabs. Shia Muslims are in Iran and in Iraq and in Syria. Right? And what we're seeing here is Israel being aligned to Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Arab states. Now, the reason that is super interesting and something that we should be watching, because in Ezekiel 38, it says that Russia and Iran and Turkey will come and invade Israel, but there's an opposing force that says, what on earth are you doing? And the opposing force is Sheba and Dedan and Tarshish and the young lions. And Sheba and Dedan is the exact same area as where the Sunni Arabs lived. Exactly the same. I mean, almost to the square foot. The Sunni Arabs live in Sheba and Dedan. America is one of the young lions of Britain, who is Tarshish. Yeah? So this coalition that was put together this week at this big conference is exactly the same as Ezekiel 38. Now, here's the other amazing thing. Last sales aid for you here. Because at that conference, there was another group of nations who said, well, we're not invited to that conference, so I tell you what, we'll have our own conference. On the very same day that they were having a meeting in Poland, these three got together and had their own conference. Any idea who this lot is? Putin, Iran, Turkey. The very three nations that are predominant in Ezekiel 38 who will come and invade Israel. So they said, okay, you get together in Poland and you talk about peace and security. Meanwhile, we are going to get together and we are going to form our own plans together. I would suggest to you that for the first time since Christadelphians have existed, since the mid-1800s, never ever have we seen so clearly in one week the division and the dividing up of the nations as we've been looking for 170 years in one week. This is so incredibly, you know, focused and clear, isn't it, in terms of what God said that we should be looking after. Because God says in Ezekiel 38, Russia will head up an army and bring with him Iran and bring with him Turkey. And on the other side will be the Gulf Arab states and America and Britain. And they've done it all under the banner on our side, we'll say our side, under the America side of peace and security in the Middle East. There's a lot more that we could say about all of this, but I'm conscious of time. Just come and have one final quick look at the reading that we read in Psalm 83, which is our middle reading for today. It's incredible that it is today. Because in Psalm 83, this tells us something that's going to happen before Jesus comes back. It says in verse 2 in the NIV, don't you hear the uproar of your enemies? Don't you see your arrogant enemies are rising up? They devise crafty schemes against your people. They conspire against your precious ones. They say, come, let us wipe out Israel as a nation. We will destroy the very memory of its existence. So basically, there's a group of people who say, we are going to destroy Israel. We're going to wipe them off the map. People won't even remember them. And at the conference this week called Peace and Security of the Middle East, Mike Pence, who's Mike Pence, by the way? American Vice President, he's second in command of America. He was there and he stood up and he said, well, let me read what it said in Reuters. This week, US Vice President Mike Pence claimed at a summit on peace and security in the Middle East that Iran is planning a new Holocaust to destroy Israel. The Iranian regime openly advocates another Holocaust and seeks the means to achieve it, he told delegates at the conference, which was co-hosted by the US and Poland in Warsaw. So we've got the actual nation Iran saying we want to remove Israel as a nation. And in fact, just before this started, this talk started, this is how fast things are moving right now. If I can find it, yeah, here it is. Iran's foreign minister, this is about 20 minutes ago, in the Jerusalem Post, Iran's foreign minister says risk of war with Israel is very great. So this is the tension that is built up. Part of the tension is building up because on the 9th of April, Israel goes to their elections. And if you read this week's Weekly World Watch, you'll see that the nations around, the people around Israel are saying, actually, we're going to start conflict with Israel anytime soon, before the 9th of April, on their northern and southern front in Gaza and Lebanon and Syria, to stir things up before the election. And you can see with everything else going on that this could happen. What I'm saying is, fine, maybe it's another, you know, the peace and safety could be just part of this. It's a picture, really, isn't it, of what we should be looking for, and there could be much more to develop. But surely, with all these things adding up together, we must stay awake, be busy in the house, not fall asleep, be alert, and be on side, shouldn't we, with the Lord Jesus Christ. What we don't want to do now is give up or fall asleep and be found weeping and gnashing teeth when Jesus comes back. He's coming back with the most amazing gift if we're on side, isn't he? Absolutely incredible. He's going to ask us to help him to sort this world out. Humble little us sat in Tewkesbury, meaningless people, suddenly become super, super important people to Jesus. He's not going to do it on his own. And he's going to say, come out of obscurity. You walk down the street now, nobody knows that you're a child of God, do they? You look like everybody else. But when I come back and you're made immortal and remove temptation and, you know, given the abilities that we don't have right now to speak properly and to understand everything and to not be tempted, but to have empathy with those who, that's what's going to happen, isn't it? It really, truly is. And to be granted immortal life can only possibly be achieved through what we're about to remember now, which is the sacrifice of Jesus, for he made all of this possible. And do you know something? We, out of all people that have ever lived, might be the only people that never, ever taste of death. That's how powerful his sacrifice is. Even Jesus had to die, but his sacrifice is so powerful and removes sin so completely that we will never taste of death if Jesus comes, God willing, before we do die.